ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Observing Vamana Dvadasi, and I thought I would read, discuss and read two sections. One is the personality of Godhead appearing before Aditi and his promise upon her request that he would assist her. Become her son, and so forth. And then, so that's the Lord fulfilling, responding to and fulfilling the desire of his devotees, the needs and protecting his devotees. And then when Vamana appears before Bali Maharaj, those two sections. So the narration begins actually back in the sixth canto, where Prajapati Daksha, part two, meaning there's in the fourth canto, there's Prajapati Daksha who offended Lord Shiva, who got his head chopped off and got a goat's head in his place, and he died. Fourth canto. In the sixth canto, he reappears as the son of the Prachetas, and he still has the similar traits, although the offense to Lord Shiva was relieved. The tendency wasn't like chopping the weed, and the root's still there, and it grows again. So, the same person, same soul, given the same name with the same mentality. He wanted to produce praja, and he was envious. So, his daksha part two, after being not satisfied in the quality of the children that he was producing, he went and performed austerities and offered Hamsa Guya prayers to the personality of Godhead, who appeared before him and blessed him, even by his appearance, that I'll supply you with, make arrangements for you to have a qualified wife with whom very highly qualified children will be produced. So 10,000 sons and 1,000 sons were produced. All of them became brahmacharis. Daksha was frustrated. He cursed Narada. And then he produced daughters. The daughters were then married to different sages. And Diti and Aditi were amongst the daughters of Prajapati Daksha. And something like, some number, I got the number 7 or 9 or something, daughters of the many daughters of Daksha were entrusted to Kashyapa. And Kashyapa produced with Aditi many demigods. And Diti was in a competitive spirit. My sister has so many children, and I don't have children. So and an untimely circumstance and time and so forth, she approached her husband for children, and he consented, but indicated to her that because of the inappropriateness of, in so many ways, sons will be born, which are, who will be not of good quality, or demoniac. And so, two demoniac sons were born. And one of these two demoniac sons took over the kingdom of the demigods. And Aditi offered prayers to the personality of Godhead for protection. And to assist her, to the end of her prayers, she says, you know, you who can fulfill everybody's everything, what to speak of such petty achievements as conquering one's rivals? So she wanted some assistance to restore the kingdom of the Devas back to the Devas and take the kingdom back away from, it was Bali Maharaj, who was a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj, who had conquered the demigods' kingdom. So she wanted the kingdom back for her sons. So the personality of Godhead is standing before Aditi, and he said, O King Parikshit, best of the Bharata dynasty, when the lotus-eyed lord, the super soul of all living entities, was thus worshipped by Aditi, he replied as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O mother of the demigods, I have already understood your long-cherished desires for the welfare of your sons. They have been deprived of all opulences and driven from their residences by their enemies. O Devi, O goddess, I can understand that you want to regain your sons and be together with them to worship me after defeating the enemies in battle and retrieving your abode and opulences. You want to see the wives of the demons lamenting for the death of their husbands when those demons, the enemies of your sons, are killed in the battle by the demigods of whom Indra is the chief. You want your sons to regain their lost reputation and opulence and live again on their heavenly planet as usual. O mother of the demigods, in my opinion, almost all the chiefs of the demons are now unconquerable, for they are being protected by brahmanas, whom the Supreme Lord always favors. Of course, that's himself. Thus, the use of power against them now will not at all be a source of happiness. He's unfolding some strategy here. Yet, because I have been satisfied by the activities of your vow, O Goddess Aditi, I must find some means to favor you. For worship of me never goes in vain, but certainly gives the desired result according to what one deserves. You have prayed to me and properly worship me by performing the great Payovrata ceremony for the sake of protecting your sons. Because of Kashyapa Muni's austerities, I shall agree to become your son and thus protect your other brother, your other sons. Always thinking of me as being situated within the body of your husband, Kashyapa, go worship your husband who has been purified by his austerity. O lady, even if someone inquires, you should not disclose this fact to anyone. That which is very confidential is successful if kept secret. No purports to any of this. After speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead disappeared from that very spot. Aditi, having received the extremely valuable benediction that the Lord would appear as her son, considering herself very successful with great devotion, she approached her husband. Being situated in a meditational trance, Kashyapa Muni, whose vision is never mistaken, could see that a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead had entered within him. O King, so Shukadeva speaking to Parikshit, as the wind promotes friction between two pieces of wood and thus gives rise to fire, Kashyapa Muni, whose transcendental position was fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transferred his potency into the womb of Aditi. When Lord Brahma understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was now within the womb of Aditi, he began to offer prayers to the Lord by reciting transcendental names. And then comes his prayers. So this is one of those apparently partiality behaviors of the Personality of Godhead. In the first chapter of the seventh canto, which discusses basically the same circumstance, well, similar circumstance, where the Supreme Lord is appealed to by the demigods. Hearing their appeal, he takes the side of the demigods. The last chapter of the sixth canto is discussing that. And the beginning of the seventh canto, Shukadeva Goswami is asked this question by Maharaj Pariksit. Wait a minute. The beginning of the last chapter, you spoke about the Lord taking sides, but the Lord is impartial. So how do we understand this? I mean, is he partial or is he impartial? And if he's partial, then how is he able to maintain his position as the Personality of God? So like it's confusing. Can you please explain all this? So it's an important question that takes up. It's the initializing question of the whole canto. But what comes at the beginning is important, you know, like a section. And the rest is in different ways expanding upon that. So in any case, the answer that's given, that's given in a summary way, and then it's given in an expanded way, and then it's expanded upon the expanded way. But the Personality of Godhead is impartial towards the demigods and towards the demons, because in either case he's elevating them and ultimately bringing them to the point of liberation. Of course, there's different kinds of liberation, but that's because of their regard for him and because he's all good and well-wishing upon them. It's elevating, purifying, and ultimately liberating. Although the behavior looks favorable to one, unfavorable to the other. It's like if one considers by external appearances of things only, we won't get it. One won't get it. But the deeper sense, to understand the Personality of Godhead and how he conducts himself with things of this world, like us and people that we interact with, it may look like partiality and, you know, not neutrality. It's a nice subject. It's an important aspect of understanding, especially from our conditioned position, to understand the benevolence of Krishna, whether it's this or that or the other thing. So, he's now within the womb of Aditi, and Lord Brahma and the demigods are offering their prayers, and then we'll go over to the following chapter. Well, the following chapter is called Lord Brahma, the Dwarf Incarnation. Here, he appears before Bali. This is the following chapter. Chapter 18. When the Lord heard that Bali Maharaj was performing Ashvamedha sacrifices under the patronage of the Brahmanas belonging to the Bhrigu dynasty, the Supreme Lord, who was full in every respect, proceeded there to show his mercy to Bali Maharaj. By his weight, he pushed down the earth with every step. While engaging in performing the sacrifice in the field known as Bhrigu Kacha, on the northern bank of the Narmada River, the Brahminical priests, descendants of Bhrigu, saw Vamana to be like the sun rising nearby. O king, because of Vamana's bright effulgence, the priests, along with Bali Maharaj and all the members of the assembly, were robbed of their splendor. Thus they began to ask one another whether the sun god himself, or Sanat Kumar, or the fire god had personally come to see the sacrificial ceremony. While the priests of the Bhrigu dynasty and their disciples talked and argued in various ways, the Supreme Personality Godhead, Vamana, holding in his hands, the rod, the umbrella, and a water pot full of water, entered the arena of the Ashvamedha sacrifice. But here's how his features. Appearing as a Brahmana boy, wearing a belt of straw, a sacred thread, an upper garment of deer skin, and matted locks of hair, Lord Brahmana entered the arena of sacrifice. His brilliant effulgence diminished the brilliance of all the priests and their disciples, who thus stood from their seats and welcomed the Lord properly by offering obeisances. Bali Maharaj, jubilant at seeing Lord Brahmanade, whose beautiful limbs contributed equally to the beauty of his entire body, offered him a seat with great satisfaction. Thus, offering a proper reception to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always beautiful to the liberated souls, Bali Maharaj worshipped him by washing his feet. Lord Shiva, the best of the demigods, who carries on his forehead the emblem of the moon, receives on his head with great devotion the Ganges water emanating from the toe of Vishnu. Being aware of religious principles, Bali Maharaj knew this. Consequently, following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva, he also placed on his head the water that had washed the Lord's lotus feet. Very nice explanation. Bali Maharaj then said to Lord Brahmadeva, "O Brahmana, I offer you my hearty welcome and my respectful obeisances. Please, let us know what we may do for you. We think of you as the personified austerity of the great Brahmana sages, O my Lord. Because you have kindly arrived at our home, all my forefathers are satisfied, our family and the entire dynasty have been sanctified, and the sacrifice we are performing is now complete because of your presence. O son of a Brahmana, today the fire of sacrifice is ablaze according to the injunction of Shastra, and I have been freed from all the sinful reactions of my life by the water that has washed your lotus feet, O my Lord. By the touch of your small lotus feet, the entire surface of the world has been sanctified. And the chapter ends with, O son of a Brahmana, it appears that you have come here to ask me for something. Therefore, whatever you may take, whatever you want, you may take from me. O best of those who are worshipable, you may take from me a cow, gold, a furnished house, palatable food and drink, the daughter of a Brahmana for your wife, prosperous villages, horses, elephants, chariots, or whatever you desire. End of chapter. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni goes to visit so many different places to find the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, one of the places he goes to is Indraloka. Because in previous places, there are those who are great devotees of the Lord. They worship the deity form of the Lord, or in various ways propitiate the Supreme Lord, and he responds. But he's told that Vamana resides in Indraloka. Of course, he has other residence places as well. But he resides there, and daily Indra personally worships Vamana. And he sees the worship of Indra worshipping Vamana. And then when the worship is over, Vamana retires or recedes and goes somewhere. So he approaches Indra saying, oh, you're the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. And describes in various ways how he's received the Lord's mercy. And one of the responses given by Indra said, no, no, no. He's here, yes, but it's so embarrassing. The personality of Godhead, normally when he comes to give protection to his devotees, he comes as a kshatriya and he destroys the opposition. In this case, he came disguised and tricked the opponent and took away everything from him. And, you know, it's so embarrassing when you're a big kshatriya and a little boy, and by tricks he takes this kingdom back. And we heard, of course, the personality of Godhead can give capacity and take capacity. But as a strategian, he was indicating to Aditi, they're practically invincible, so bringing a military battle against them is not going to bear fruit. It's saying such a thing, he could easily do whatever he wants to do. Defeat them, take away their ability, have them, you know, fall off a cliff, or whatever he wants to do. Anything could happen. So it's a lila. So he can, later it's described by the Lord himself, that he did what he did, one of the reasons why he did the way that he did, was to honor Bali Maharaj. Because although Bali Maharaj acted as the enemy of Indra, and Mahavakya verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the one that says, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, indicates he appears as the protector of from those who are the enemies of Indra. So, Bali Maharaj is appearing to be an enemy of Indra. So, that's the Lord appears. And yet, at the same time, he's acting as an enemy of Indra. He's a great devotee. It's puzzling. It's enigmatic. Not the same, as Dhritarasura, who in the sixth canto appears as the enemy of Indra. But that's a very special case. That's King Chuchaketu, who became like that because of a curse. There's no indication that Bali Maharaj became Bali Maharaj by a curse. Rather, his devotional qualification, our understanding is, comes from his being the grandson of Prahlad. And by that, it's not like his gene pool, it's just, you know, the merit of Prahlad goes down to his descendants. So Bali Maharaj, although in the Daitya family, had very, very exalted qualities. And in the association of Vamana, those exalted qualities became fully manifest. And he, Vamana, or the personality Godhead, wanted to exhibit and show the world the quality of Bali Maharaj. And so he appeared this way, a dwarf Brahmana. To honor his devotee, Bali, even above his devotee, Indra. Because Indra wasn't capable of what Bali was capable of. Just surrendering everything. Indra was in another position. I want, I want, I want. And Bali is, please take, please take, please take. And even put into a situation of humiliation after doing that. No protest. Whatever the Lord wants to do. Very, very elevated soul. So the personality God had wanted to demonstrate that. This is the real standard of greatness. Not piety followed by opulence and using the opulence to whatever, rule and so forth. That's nice. That's nice. But the real standard of greatness is something else. The highest standard of greatness is something else. Bali Maharaj exhibited that. The Lord wanted the world to see this is the standard. So he appeared in this way as Vamana. There's a nice verse where the Lord says like that, you know, after granting his three steps of land and two steps covering everything, the third step goes on his head. Vamana said, you made a promise and you haven't kept your promise. You promised me three paces of land. The third went on your head, but that's not the pace of land. So you broke your promise. So you should be punished. Tie him up. So he was tied up. And the bystanders watching all of this started getting agitated. Why has he done this? This is wrong. He's surrendered everything to him and now he's treating him like a criminal. And you know, this side, that side. Prahlad Maharaj came and said, no, it's good. He made a promise. He violated his promise and so he has to be punished. And the Lord can decide how he's to be punished. And back and forth. And then Vamana spoke, saying, just see the exalted, his purpose is revealed. Just see the exalted quality of Bali Maharaj. Although he was way up here and now he's way down here. He's been disgraced. He went against the instruction of Shukracharya. He's lost his opulence. He's lost his position. He's lost his dignity. He's lost his reputation. And I said that he's not even a religious person. He's violated religious principles. Yeah, he did violate religious. He said he did violate religious principles. I spoke like that. But it just seemed, and there's no protest. Who can even endure all of that? What to speak of no protest? Just see this quality. Then in the purport, Prabhupada says, sometimes, we can't extend this to all circumstances, because sometimes the Lord puts his devotee into difficulty. And the purpose of that is to remove all other shelters except the Lord. So while the Lord may put one in difficulty, he explains, that one who takes shelter of him also receives the strength to address the difficulty. Of course, one may not take shelter of the Lord when there's difficulty, and then feel I don't have the strength. But the strength is there from the same person who put one in difficulty. It makes the relationship stronger and the affection stronger from both sides. The affection of the Lord towards his devotee and the devotee towards the Lord. It's a very nice verse. Very nice message. Because life has its difficulties. But not only sometimes, almost always. It may appear to be like you get a breather. Prabhupada compares this to the punishment of a criminal. In some cultures, the procedure for punishing the criminal is the criminal is put in water and pushed underwater. He's held underwater until practically his lungs are bursting. And then they lift him out of the water and then back down again. And then back up again. And then back down again. So, happiness, I can breathe again. And then back down again. So, there are different standards of happiness. That's not what real happiness is. So now I can breathe again, that the infinite torture of the suffering is relieved for a moment and then back again. We're in a difficult place. So one who relies upon the Supreme Lord for relief from the difficulty, this is a devotee. And one, even if the difficulty continues and continues and continues, one doesn't, the exalted nature of Bali is, he didn't deviate from that position of shelter-taking, and the same person, Supreme Person, who put him in that difficulty supplied the strength to overcome the difficulty. And he honored him for that. Although he knew that was his situation, nonetheless, I mean, that was his quality, the difficulty was supplied. And for a king, it's not a small thing, it's a very significant thing to be, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who has once been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So he was treated in that way, with dishonor. Although he had, what he had done was most exalted, treated that way. So apparently partial by he who is impartial. So the appearances of things aren't what things are. It takes thoughtfulness and detachment and wisdom, spiritual wisdom, to understand things properly. We're not always in that position of wisdom. It's hard to see things properly. Therefore, it's very valuable to have scripture and study it carefully and internalize it and apply it in our lives. And those are some thoughts on the Bhava today. See if there's any discussion or questions.
I was wondering, like, when there is a premonition of a danger, what should be an appropriate prayer from a devotee? Like, is it that, like, let anything happen and you will protect me, or please protect me from that?
It depends. Certainly, you're my shelter. I mean, like, think of the cowherd boys, or you know, the residents of Vrindavan. They turn to Krishna for protection. It's not like that's material, so you don't ask for protection. It's natural. We see it's a symptom of surrender to see him as our protector. So the premonition of danger, and we turn to him. You're my shelter. The circumstances are beyond my control. They're within your control. So we turn to him for protection. That's very suitable, natural. The intelligence how to address the situation.
Says that my devotee never perishes. So we see that many things happen to devotees physically. So what is it that doesn't perish within a devotee?
Not the body. The body perishes. Ultimately, it's our spiritual well-being or bhakti, it is eternal, and it doesn't perish. Vinashati. Everything that comes into being is destroyed. So this promise is not, I reverse that, everything that comes into being will stay forever in being. So but those things that are eternal, he sustains and supports them. Although when we turn one's attention away, so that may get covered, but he sustains and supports them. And like what Lord Vishnu said to Aditi is, one who takes shelter of me, their prayers are never go in vain. The form or the manifestation of that may be different than our expectation, but that's something that's also not destroyed. Circumstances are going to come and go, but the spiritual principle of the Lord's relationship with the devotee remains unchanged. That's never destroyed. Good question. It's on the same theme of the Lord's partiality. A little different, but somewhat similar. And that is, the similarity is, if we look at things from material or external perspective only, it looked like, you know, he doesn't keep his promise. Things are destroyed. Like, you know, please keep my family safe and somebody has a problem. He didn't fulfill my promise or my prayer. Etc. You can't look at just the material externals. The promise is not, I'll keep the material externals always very nice. No problems. Just be my devotee and you won't get a toothache. Don't stub your toe.
So even whatever consciousness we have and whatever prayers we offer in that consciousness, like you're saying that we may offer a prayer, but the expectation of it may not be like Krishna removing, destroying the material creation. So still that mood of prayer is maintained, even if the prayer may have a material expectation, but the mood of prayer, like...
Sure. yetamam prapadyante. According to the level of consciousness, one is going to regard the Lord. One may regard him as an enemy. That's another way to regard him. But the prayer of someone that wants something, wealth, or something, they pray to God for that something. They're in it. There's a premonition of danger, so they pray to God for removal of the danger. But that's a capacity of short, short-sighted. They can only see that which is close. Like there's a danger. They remove the danger. If someone's coming into the house and they've got a weapon, so God, please protect us. I was in a situation where someone was describing their encounter with a bear. To tell the story, it's nice. They were walking along a trail, and they saw a mother moose running across the trail in the forest on this side, forest on that side. They said, oh, look at the big moose. And following right behind her was a little baby moose. Oh, look, little baby moose. And they didn't register. They're running. So maybe they're running from something. And then often the, you know, pursuing the baby moose and the mother moose was a bear. So it's a mother and her daughter see this bear, like, staring at them. And so they ran. That's one of the things you don't do. So the bear stopped chasing the moose, started chasing them. And they were running and running, and you know, the person who's narrating this, he said, I think I was 8 years old, and my mother, you know, so she thought, like, my mother's going to protect me, and the mother was thinking, you know, why are you leaving me behind? Running and running, but you know, and their house was down the path, so, but the bear was catching up to them, and they realized they're not going to make it to the house. So the mother turned. This is what you're supposed to do when, because I learned this from Bhakti Marg Swami. Bears have bad vision. Like, you know, they don't have an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist. So you're supposed to, like, stand with your arms in the air, make yourself look big. So what she did, she stood. She just, like, I don't know if she could have been trained to do this, but she did it. She, with her arms, you know, in the name of Jesus, stop! In the name of Jesus! And the bear stopped. And so, you know, the bear turned and walked away. And they, like, they didn't run anymore because they knew that wasn't the right thing to do, and they went back to the house. And you know, the mother was saying, "How come I'm your mother. How come you were not, you know, running ahead of me?" And she, you know, well, wait a minute, I'm 8 years old. And anyway, had their family thing going on. But you know, what do you do when there's danger and there's no shelter? Maybe, you know, that wouldn't stop the bear. But in this case, it did. But that's what one who's has some relationship with God will do. Turn to God for protection, like, you know, please remove the danger. So his promise isn't, back to your question, the initial one. It's not that you know, the bears are going to stop when you raise your, you know, do the thing. It won't be a problem. And just because there's, even if the bear problems stop, there's birth, death, disease, and old age problems. And so the promise isn't those things won't stop. Or the other ones will stop, but those four will remain. That's not the promise. It's so seeing things in the proper perspective. Our devotion for him is not going to be destroyed by something external any more than it's created by something external. You know, some circumstance. Okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Did the Goddess of Fortune also incarnate along with the Vamana Avatar?
No indication.
Is that even the case with the Narsingha Avatar? No. In Rama and Krishna Avatar, the Goddess of Fortune is accompanied along
with I understand the question.
Yes.
I understand the question. Well, when Narsingadeva appeared, Lakshmi was also there, correct? She saw that form and even she was afraid. Who's ever seen such? So, I don't know of any scriptural reference to say one way or the other, yes or no. The Lord always has His potency. So, but the way in which she manifested or did not manifest, I don't know. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, is there any indication of what Krishna feels when he is meeting out punishment, especially to the demons? Is he just neutral or is he enjoying the pastime? Or... because sometimes it seems very harsh.
Well, let me think, see if there's some scriptural reference. That the seeming very harsh part is because of the it's fulfillment of the yayatam mamprapadyante. One who sees him as enemy, he conducts himself accordingly. So that's the seeming. It seems harsh because of their regard for him. So it's not like, oh yeah, well I'll let you have it. It's not like that. It's to reciprocate with their regard for him. They wish to see him as enemy and he's enemy. He speaks some, you know, in the course of dealing with some demons, he speaks commonly in chivalrous words. Mm-hmm. But it's that's my understanding is it's part A and B. It's part of the reciprocation with the one who sees him as enemy. But another like what Jayant Vijay are contemplating when they pray to the Supreme Lord to be in opposition to him so that they can fulfill the Lord's desire for chivalry, the secondary rasa of chivalry. So something like that. There's, let's say, as with an athlete, they thrive on competition. Or as with a king, they like a good thrashing. Mm-hmm. No, somebody that's not a kshatriya doesn't like a good thrashing, but a kshatriya likes a good thrashing. Like a brahmana likes austerities. And others look at austerities like, oh, austerities. But a brahmana likes. So, as below, I mean, as above, so below. So, the Supreme Lord likes. It's part of, it's as it is here, it's there, it's here because it's there. He likes. But, you know, the manner in which it comes out, my sense is it's better understood by that he's reciprocating with those who regard him in an inimical fashion to the degree of the inimical manner in which they regard him. He responds similarly to the devotee, right? Different types of devotees. He responds accordingly. to how they regard him. Same. So the nature of his response is according to them. But the competition dynamic is part of his nature. He likes.
Like for example, say Duryodhana and his brothers, when they were killed, you know,
well, the other dynasty members were also killed.
Right. So when they're dying in pain, especially Duryodhana and his party, what does Krishna feel? You know, is
I understand your question. I mean, one of the things is the illusory energy. The real pain is something else. So that kind of pain is the reciprocation, the justice of the universe for their atrocity. So, but and their misidentification with that pain is part of the part of the built-in arrangement to relieve people of acting independently from the Lord to begin with. But you know, the higher understanding is it's all illusory. It's like a dream. So how does one feel about that? There's the deeper picture is the compassion of the living entity. The compassion of the Lord towards the living entity. I mean, because I've been speaking about it so much, it's just the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu, and he has a compassionate desire. I wish, out of compassion, that they can, rather than be in this covered state of consciousness, they can be, in Prabhupada's language, was enjoy blissful rasa with me in the spiritual world. I wish that for them. And then creation comes to being. Creation has all of these things. Whether it's at his hand directly or indirectly. You know, seeing Duryodhana and what to speak of, you know, that's the directly, then there's the indirectly, and he's all knowing of directly and indirectly. So how does he feel about that suffering? It's the purpose of it is, on the one hand, but on the other hand, to give them the living entities the opportunity to try to fulfill their desires for independent enjoyment, which cannot happen. So, oh my goodness, that's not kind. You want to get into it. But it is, because there's a purpose within that, as there's a purpose within the destruction of the members of Duryodhana and his party in the Lord's presence. They were liberated. Read that chapter, Canto 7, Chapter 1. Because it probes the question you're asking. I mean, specifically you're asking, how does he feel about it? But it's well-wishing, that's how he feels about it. Well, can't he well-wish them some other way besides he has to undergo that misery?
And that was going to be my next question. That was going to be my next question. It seems like we must have committed some severe crime to deserve such harsh punishment.
Well,
versus this. We want to enjoy independently.
It's a little bit like the stick is needed for persons who cannot hear. And then you show the stick, and then some persons still, a kshatriya is one who, when necessary, they use the stick. They don't have to use the stick. So abuse is when they use it unnecessarily, but to use it is not, if it's done justly. A person who is going to harm other people can't understand anything else. But it's not... if it's done benevolently, it's not with malice. It's done benevolently for the protection of innocent people and for the person to check that person from further atrocity, because there isn't anything else that they're going to understand. It's a little bit like what he's really saying to Aditi, that they're unstoppable. So he made them unstoppable. And can he not relieve them of that unstoppableness? He doesn't interfere with free will. So there's the free will to be unstoppable, and they undergo austerities, and so they're rewarded for their austerities. But then they become impossible. He who sets the rules, now persons are in this unstoppable position. And, you know, the whole thing with Duryodhana and how his, through Gandhari's austerity, you know, the whole story. She was wanting to make him invincible. Krishna tricked him. You know, all these, why did he do that? He could have stopped him some other way. What's he feeling? Why is he, you know, so... The questioning of transcendental knowledge will help relieve one of doubting the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And without transcendental knowledge, one is going to doubt the Personality of Godhead and those who represent the Personality of Godhead. If I look through the lens of morality, you know, rather than acknowledging the Supreme Lord, that the starting point is the Supreme Lord is unlimitedly loving, and then you go, why is lovingness exhibited this way? From the position of doubt, not from the position of, you know, I wish to understand it. If it's taken from the position of doubt, then you know, it's
inevitable.
Yeah, it's just this one stuck in the material atmosphere and making offense. So if the desire is there, I wish to be enlightened because I'm sure there's benevolence. I don't understand it because of my paradigm. I'm sure it's benevolent. I wish to get illumined rather than otherwise. It is wrong to confine the Lord to our paradigm of stuff. What is happiness? What is justice? What is benevolent? What is love? It's my standard because, you know, he has to ask me, that's the standard, rather than his standard. So how to understand his standard of kindness to all living beings? So Maharaj Pariksit asks that question at the beginning of the seventh canto. And there's like lots of discussion. Not like complete, but lots of discussion on the topic. Okay, yeah, thank you very much. Prabhupada, King.